Every other week, opposite the main Hey YA podcast, we'll bring you a short-form podcast of YA talk across a wide range of topics. I'm Tirza Price, and for today's episode, I wanted to talk about an issue that is kind of a follow-up to last week's full episode that I did with Erica on indie presses that are putting out really excellent YA. So if you haven't gone and listened to that one already, I really recommend that you do so. You don't necessarily need to listen to it, you know, before you listen to this episode, but I think it's a really great episode. We had a lot of fun with it. We cover some really great YA books that are being put out by independent publishers and presses. So not self-publishing, but small presses. And why we think it's really important that you're aware of these books and support them. And, you know, spoiler alert, you might actually already be supporting some of these presses and reading some of these books and just like not realizing it, because some of these indie presses have some, you know, big bestsellers and some big names behind them. But before I really dive into the meat of our episode, let's hear from our sponsor.
Today's episode is brought to you by Underlined. Haven't read a Natasha Preston thriller yet? We dare you to try. She's known for her line of chilling young adult suspense novels like The Cellar and The Fear. The New York Times and USA Today bestselling author excels at putting fear into the hearts of her readers. So her newest book, titled The Dare, is about five friends whose senior prank goes very, very wrong. This is the perfect graduation season read for thriller fans who can handle a good scare. The Dare is now available wherever books are sold. You can learn more about it at getunderlined.com. So again, this young adult thriller is about five friends with a prank that goes wrong. There are dark secrets, a twisty plot, and creepy I Know What You Did Last Summer vibes. So if you know, it's graduation season, you want to revel in that, but like make it scary, you know what I mean? Pick up The Dare by Natasha Preston, and thanks again to Underline for sponsoring this episode.
This episode is sponsored by The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy. Robbie and Trevor Cressmont have enough wealth to ensure they'll never be found guilty of any wrongdoing, even if everyone believes they're behind the deaths of their ex-girlfriends. Let us all take a collective angry sigh at that. Lauren O'Brien, the new girl at school, has a dark past of her own, and she's desperate for a fresh start. Except when she starts a relationship with Robbie, her chance is put in jeopardy. During what's meant to be their last weekend together, Lauren stumbles across evidence that might just implicate Robbie. And after a third death rocks the town, she must decide whether to end things with Robbie or risk becoming another cautionary tale. This is an edge-of-your-seat YA thriller that's perfect for fans of Karen McManus and Holly Jackson. Make sure you pick that up now wherever books are sold. And thank you once again to The One That Got Away with Murder by Trish Lundy for sponsoring today's show.
All right. So yeah, last week we had a lot of fun researching our indie press episode. We, you know, realized that there's a lot more really great independent presses that are putting out amazing YA than I think either of us had like fully realized. Like once we started making the list, we're like, wow, this is a lot bigger list than we were expecting. And we also talked a bit about how supporting indie presses is really good for like the overall health of publishing. And the fact that like independent presses are doing some amazing work and they're taking on books and taking chances on books that honestly might not find a home at like the larger big five publishers. And, you know, these indie presses are putting a lot of focus in promoting and really supporting these books that are like a lot of them are being published by marginalized writers. And, you know, frankly, a lot of those books might not get that sort of same attention at a larger big five publisher. So that's kind of like all of the reasons why we think indie presses are great. But then like the opposite end of that is that like it's 2023 and like it's 2023. Book banners are out in full force. So indie presses are really feeling the brunt of that, I think, even more so than the big five publishers. I think there's this really common idea, and it is kind of a misconception, although not entirely, that if a book is banned, then, oh, well, that'll just make people even more curious about it. And, you know, kids will want to read it even more, which is all true. But then, like, also more people will buy it. And, like, it's really gotten to the point where a lot of jokes are being made about how, like, oh, another banned book. Like, oh, the author's going to enjoy all their extra money because everyone's going out and buying their book. But, like, here's the thing. Book banning only results in an increase in sales if people know it's happening and if they're like already sort of motivated or like the media is motivating them to buy it on a large scale. So like this is just one example, but like when the graphic memoir Mouse by Art Spiegelman was banned in Tennessee last year or the year before, I think it was last year though, it caused like this huge public outcry because of like the timing of like the banning announcement, and it resulted in the book just like literally flying off the shelves. And I think it took reprints like weeks to catch up with that demand. So like that is an example of, yeah, banning a book does, you know, manufacture this demand for it, and people buy it, and that makes a lot of money for the author and for the publisher. But if a book is just being quietly pulled from library shelves in a small town and nobody knows that it's happening, then people aren't going to go run out and buy, you know, like 5 copies of the book. And then you like take that situation and you multiply that by like 100 or 1,000 or even 10,000, because that's exactly what's happening, is like many books around all over the country are just quietly being pulled from shelves. And then like there's no sales there, you know? So I actually found this really great article from The Atlantic, and I'm dropping it in the show notes. And it actually talks about, you know, book banning doesn't always equate to massive sales without a media blitz. And right now, I think we are so overwhelmed by how many books are being challenged. And it's become so commonplace. Like, I know that I have a hard time keeping track of all of the books that are being banned. So, like, you know, that's actually eating into people's sales, and it's eating into like authors' profits and publishers' profits. And it's not, you know, one of those things where we can kind of go, oh, banning is bad, but hey, at least they're making money off of it, because it's not happening. Which kind of gets into soft censorship. And that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today. So soft censorship happens, you know, when there is no, you know, media blitz about what's going on. It's what happens when, you know, books are quietly removed from the shelves because librarians and educators are afraid that the books will be challenged, or like they know that if they buy this book in this current climate, somebody is going to see it and they're going to protest and it's going to cause a problem. And so rather than, you know, going through with buying the book and facing that problem head on, they just decide not to buy the book at all. And this, I mean, I've seen this in action. I've been complicit in it. I'm going to even admit, when I was working as a librarian in Iowa, a colleague at the school library, so I was a public librarian, but a colleague at the school library asked me for a list of award-winning YA books that I'd recommend that she purchase for her high school library. She wanted to beef up that collection. I gave her a list. But then we had like this moment where I was like, actually, you shouldn't buy some of the books on this list, because I know your budget is limited and you want books in the hands of teens, but some of these books have sex in them. And at that point, we knew that the Iowa legislature was going to pass Senate File 496, which is a really insidious ban on all materials containing sex in K-12 schools. And, you know, I just knew that, like, if I tell you to go buy these books, you're going to have to probably not even, like, you're not even going to get a chance to put them out on the shelves before next year, because they're probably going to be banned. And I hated that that was a conversation that we had to have. I hated that, like, I was saying, don't buy these award-winning, well-reviewed, age-appropriate YA books because of legislature that's coming down. But that is soft censorship, and that's what's happening right now all over the country. So, and the thing about soft censorship, it's so insidious because it is so hard to track. And sometimes you're even like, is this really even happening? Because I've even wondered myself, like, are the sales for my newest book just low because inflation is high and the economy sucks, and, you know, it's a third book in a series and it seems like, you know, everybody I know is just like their money is tight? Or are the sales low because this is like my first book with a queer character? I don't know. I will never know. But these are questions that I can guarantee you that publishers and authors are facing right now. So to bring this kind of back around to last week's episode, one thing that we do know for sure is that the publisher Levine Quirito is definitely feeling the pinch of soft censorship. So while researching for our last episode, I stumbled upon their 100K book challenge, which they launched earlier this spring. And the essence of this book challenge is that they are feeling like the pinch of loss of book sales, loss of revenue. They know that they publish majority like marginalized, BIPOC, queer, you know, children's and YA books, and those books just aren't selling as well as they used to. So they launched this challenge to try to raise awareness for, you know, their books and what they're trying to do and how they're trying to fight censorship. And they wanted to try and sell 100,000 books over the summer. So technically this challenge did wrap up on September 1st, and I'm just really sorry I didn't see it earlier. I don't know if it just got buried in my news feeds, if the algorithm wasn't working for me, if I wasn't paying attention, I've had a really busy summer, but like, I really do hope that others paid attention and that, you know, this campaign didn't just kind of go fall into the wayside. So on just a little note on the campaign page, it says, they say, Levine Quirito says, extremists have chosen to target books with LGBTQ content and books that center Black, Latina, AAPI, and Indigenous stories and perspectives. These are the exact books and voices we publish. In fact, 85% of LQ's list is from queer and or BIPOC authors and illustrators, and these extremists want to pull companies like LQ out of business. So obviously, we don't want that to happen. Their books are award winners. They receive so many starred reviews. They have truly filled a real and necessary gap in kid lit and YA, especially when it comes to like Indigenous voices. I mean, they've published like the Newbery and Prince winners of the last couple of years. And while that might not be like a big deal for a big five publisher to say, it is a big deal for a small company of, you know, fewer than 10 employees. So additionally, authors and publishing professionals who call themselves the friends of Levine Quirito recently did a fundraising auction to help give them an influx of cash. They raised over $100,000, by the way. That wrapped up a few days ago. But on the auction site, it said that LQ's backbone for their sales is their institutional sales, so like the school and library markets. And those have been down more than 30% this year. So I think it's totally safe to say that that big dip is because of soft censorship. So, you know, this technically their 100,000 books challenge, it wrapped up September 1st, but I think the spirit of the challenge is still alive. And I think that this is just a really great reminder that we need to continue to support indie presses and, you know, diverse books. So if you're able to, you know, they have a special bookshop page. I linked it in the show notes. If you're not able to buy, that is okay, because I know that times are tough. We can't all afford it. But I do recommend going to your library and either checking out one of their books. You can see a listing of a lot of their books on their bookshop page and on their website. Or like ask your librarian to order. I mean, I know times are tough right now, but like literally this is what libraries are for. Like they are to buy and get you books, especially ones that you request. So two LQ books that I particularly recommend or are excited about. I loved When the Angels Left the Old Country by Sasha Lamb. Fantastic sort of historical fantasy. So, so good. I'm also really looking forward to ordering the graphic novel Brooms. It comes out next month, and it is it looks kind of like, you know, historical but supernatural. It's queer. It just looks really amazing. So I also linked that in the show notes as well. It's a graphic novel. I do want to add, just kind of on a final note, that the way we fight soft censorship is to really show up for our schools and libraries and communicate to our communities and to the people in charge of our schools and libraries that we want diverse books on the shelves. And this goes beyond, you know, the issue, the circumstances of like Levine Quirito, but it includes all publishers. Like, we need to make sure that we are showing that there is a demand for these stories. And the way we do that, unfortunately, because we live in a capitalistic society, is by spending money on them. So if you personally can't spend money on them, we got to tell our school boards and our library boards that there is value in spending money on diverse materials. Also, don't wait for a book to be challenged in your community before you show up. Like, soft censorship is probably happening where you live and you just don't know about it, because I'll be real, the librarians and educators in your lives are exhausted. And some of them are really scared for their jobs and for the future. So on a final sort of personal anecdote, I mentioned at the top of the episode that I was a public librarian in Iowa. Up until recently, I was the library director of a small rural library. We did have our fair share of censorship issues, and it did get to the point where, you know, every month when I was submitting book orders, I was really angsting over certain purchases and, you know, should I really buy this when it might incense certain people in the community? You know, I had to really remind myself every month, like, this was valuable, this was important. And it actually got to the point where, you know, Pride Month was coming up and I had kind of mentally just decided that I didn't want to make a big display. And that's a big deal for me because I love Pride, but I was just so downtrodden. I was so scared. I just didn't want to deal with it. And I actually, one of my staff members came to me and was like, I really think we need to do this. Like, can I take it on? And I was like, you know what? Yes, I will support you. Thank you for reminding me why this is important. And we, you know, we did one. And I was so happy that we did, because throughout the month, I, you know, didn't have a lot of people come up to me and thank me for the display, but I had like two people say something to me. And I saw people check out those books. And that made a big impact on me personally. And it wasn't about the praise. It's not that I need to be thanked for everything, you know, I do in a community, or I need to be thanked for doing my job. But I think that in a time where, like, you know, I was personally being targeted, and I know a lot of librarians are, this job is very hard. Hearing from the community and seeing that a display of diverse books is actually getting, like, looked at and picked up and checked out, like, it really gave me a lot, like, that oomph I needed to keep going and help me keep my chin up, knowing that, you know, look, there's proof that I am serving the community. So if you can't support banned books financially, please be that person in your local library or your school. Show up to those libraries and give the librarians the encouragement they need. Tell them that, you know, you've got their backs. Check out their books and just support them in that way. All right, so that is really all I have for you today. Thank you so much to today's sponsor for making the show possible, and thank you for listening. You can follow me on Instagram. I hang out at Tears of Price. And thank you so much also to our audio editor, Jen Zink, who makes this episode sound great. We appreciate you. And Erica and I will be back again next week for the main podcast. But until then, happy reading.